So hello and welcome to another TRU Talks on Talking Rugby Union. My name's Chris Hill and I'm hosting this episode today, and I'm delighted to say that our chat this afternoon will be with Bristol Bears' Tom Lindsay in a week where he has announced he will be retiring from professional rugby. Tom, thanks for giving us your time today. How's things?
Yeah, all good. Bit of a whirlwind week, but no, thank you very much for having me on the show.
No problem, no problem at all, Tom. And you said there it's been a bit of a whirlwind for you, and I mean, just judging by your social media, especially Twitter, you've been sort of inundated with messages of congratulations on such an impressive career for yourself. It must have been a very busy replying to all of them.
Oh, it was really overwhelming getting all the reply, message from everyone, from all the fans I've had throughout my career, coaches, players, backroom staff. So I wasn't expecting the reception I got, but it was very humbling.
And just to sort of look back on your career, Tom, you made the decision now to sort of hang up the boots from a professional point of view. Why did you think now was the right time for you to do so?
Well, I had opportunities to carry on playing in the Championship and abroad, but I think I've been playing for a long time now, and I sat down with my missus, and we're very close, and she's got a really good job in Bristol. We really love it here. I think we want to settle down here, and I just thought, look, rather than moving us around two or three more times, it's different. If you're single, it's completely different. Like you can go and venture and play rugby to your heart's content and just keep chasing that the money, unfortunately. But I think we decided probably the best thing to do now. I've got opportunities in coaching and in other bits and pieces in schools and stuff like that, and some project management work. But I think the best thing to do is to work out what's best for us. And I think it was a good time to retire professionally. I might still play locally or something like that as well, and coach locally, but that's still up in the air at the moment. I think it was the right time, and I'm quite at peace with it as well. I had a good balance of rugby and then a kind of civilian lifestyle, if you know what I mean. And I'm not trying to be patronising at all. It's just, if you do stay in that bubble too long, if you get spat out and through injury or whatever happens, it can be very hard to lose your identity and not be integrated with society as a normal person, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. And just to go back to sort of the messages that you received, a lot of your ex-teammates, you know, I know Jamie George was in touch, James Haskell was in touch. That must mean quite a lot to you to sort of reflect on those guys that you play with, that they held you in such high regard as well.
Oh, that was, yeah. I've been very lucky to be part of some amazing teams from when I was younger, being part of WASS, the glory years, when Lawrence Dallaglio was there, Josh Lucy, the winners of the 2003, there was so many of them. And to go throughout my career, like you said, James Haskell, fantastic bloke. It was really nice for him to just reach out to me and speak to me, which was, obviously, we've played each other for a long time. It was, obviously, you get people, your close friends as well. I'm not saying I'm not close to James, but for him and Jamie George to message me, it really lifted me a lot, actually, because I wasn't expecting from them. I'm not saying I don't expect that from people, but I suppose it's just like a bit of a bonus, you know what I mean, that such a big name has taken their time to message a little old me, if you know what I mean.
You're doing yourself an injustice there, Tom, because I was looking back through your career when the announcement was made, and I think you spoken about in the last few weeks as well, in terms of one of the highlights for you was representing England Saxons. I mean, is that definitely the summer number one moment for you if you look back on your career?
I think there's a handful of moments, but I think I was never capped when I was younger because of my transition in positions. But when I did get the opportunity to wear that red rose, I think it's just representing your country. I think any sport at any level is the epitome of why you want to do it. You want to play to the best level you can. Obviously, I'd love to have gone further, but it wasn't meant to be. But that day was unbelievable, and I'll never forget it.
And you mentioned before how settled you've been in Bristol over the last couple of years. You've been Tom, and we've recently spoken to Pat Lamb for a podcast that's going to be released in a couple of weeks' time. And just listening to him, I'm kind of in awe of the sort of vision and the community feel he has at the club. Is that something that's kind of helped with you and your partner settling down in Bristol, the way Bristol Bears have handled themselves?
Oh, they're a fantastic team. They're cut from the same cloth as Saracens, the way that they operate. And obviously, Bristol are still on their journey of where they want to go. And when I signed, I knew immediately that the club was a huge, had a very, very big family vibe. And Pat's vision and ethos is, if each player's families are all friends and have a relationship and that kind of bond flows throughout the team, the squad, the backroom staff, the CEOs, when it comes to crunch time, be it a big match or a hard time, for example, like now, coronavirus, that kind of unprecedented time, the bonds between each player or each member of staff is so much tighter because they know each other. They know how each other's wives, children, sisters, brothers, and that makes the organisation tighter, and that respect and that drive, that common goal. I just feel that at Bristol, they're going to go so far, and it's very exciting. And obviously, it's, as Pat calls it, the bus. People hop on the bus and come off the bus, and it's my time to come off the bus in a playing capacity. And hopefully, I'll get on the girls' bus, the Bristol Bears women's bus as well, to help them go on their journey. So it's a huge umbrella and a really exciting place to be. And I think Pat's definitely his model of how he manages coaches and develops people, not just on the pitch, off the pitch, is hugely impressive and something that I was so happy to be part of.
And it's clear, just listening to you, Tom, how much sort of Bristol have had an impact on your career. And you've played for a number of different clubs throughout your 16 years, if that's right in saying, Tom. But how did all those experiences shape you into the person you are today?
Obviously, not everyone has bad experiences and good experiences, more bad than good, or it's all different with how it goes and how you deal yourself off the pitch. And there are obviously ups and downs throughout my career, be that, as I spoke about it openly, mentally and physically. There are times where I wasn't playing very well, which obviously was due to mentality. But I think looking back at it now, I'm glad I went through a tough time mentally, because it made me realise what was really important to me in my life and who's important to me. And it gave me that time to reflect and understand that communicating with someone, be it a stranger or a colleague or someone you're teaching, you've got to remember how that you could have a flippant comment or a poor decision by yourself or not constructive feedback, direct negative feedback, that can have a real impact on everyone. You never know what people are going through, and I firmly learned that you have to understand the audience that you're talking to, be it children, the elderly. Understand who you're talking to first, earn their respect, and then I think you can help them learn and develop as people, because they trust you and respect you. And that's the biggest thing I've learned throughout my career. And you'll never get to in any profession, I believe, be it rugby, teach, whatever it is, you're never going to be perfect. You're never going to know everything. You'll be learning to the day you retire and to the day you die. And the minute you close yourself off to learning and absorbing information and talking to fellow colleagues who are in the same position you or the same role as you, same coaches, talk to them. I spent this time talking to as many coaches as I could do, listening to webinars, just listening to people, because albeit if I don't like the person, I don't like them, but I'm still going to listen to their ideas. You might take two or three things from them, but it's about accepting that you're not the full package. There are going to be things that you can be better at, the things you can be good at, and obviously you'll keep doing well. But there are things where, right, I can make myself better at this. And this time of coronavirus, the pandemic, it's given people a huge opportunity. And that's, you can either use it as a, oh God, I'm going to relax now for 10 weeks, or I'm going to be like, right, what can I do? There's loads of resources out there that companies are trying to help, LinkedIn, all kinds of companies are trying to help people out. And I think that's helped shape me mentally going forward. Obviously, I have my struggles like every other day, but I now know how to help myself and I have the people and resources to help me.
So was that kind of one of the main reasons, Tom, you decided to go and be so open and so honest on the RUP podcast, that yes, you know, you wanted to talk about your experiences, but it's also from your perspective, you might be able to go and help others who might be listening as well?
I think when James Roycroft Davis, who runs the RUP pod, obviously he's an old Mahillian. I went to the same school as him, so we both have got that thing in common anyway. But he reached out to me. I knew that there was stuff going on, but I didn't know the full extent of it. And he spoke to me, and we had a big conversation about it. And I'll be honest, I did the podcast to just talk to James, really, and just trying to help him through things. And I never expected the reception I got and how many people it reached, if you know what I mean. I was just being honest, I suppose. I wasn't I don't feel like I wasn't like harboring information or anything like that. I was just, it just flowed. I think the conversation just flowed and a lot came out. I still feel like I only scratched the surface when I spoke to James. There was a lot more to talk about in regards to the eating problems and how I was actually, how things went and how it got really bad. And there's loads of other things I could talk about, but I was getting messages from random people saying, I got a message from a father who said that his wife had committed suicide 3 or 4 months earlier, and their son hadn't stopped speaking. And he said, his son listened to the podcast, and after listening to the podcast, massive Bears fan, him and his father started having a dialogue again, and I couldn't believe it. Blew me away. And another fan that I knew when I was younger, he's been suffering from depression his whole life, and he listened to the podcast, gave him courage to come out on Facebook and speak to his family and be honest about them. And said, I've had terrible depression, which I never expected that to happen. And if I can help one person, now I'm thinking back on it, reflecting, I'm happy. I do want to help people as much as I can, and I think going down the coaching route, I never want to coach, teach, or help develop anyone the wrong way. As in, I don't want whatever happened to me when I was younger to happen to anyone else. Yeah. No one can, like, go through that. And it's just I don't blame the person. I think it was just an awareness of how to coach, and I don't think it was as good back then as it is now. It's more of an awareness and a lot more resources out there, and feedback's a lot better, I think, nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. And you mentioned so those people that have been in touch with you, and I think during the podcast, one thing that struck home with me that you said was about performance anxiety, and obviously for you it related to rugby, but I guess it's something that relates to everyone, which is maybe why you've had the feedback you've had, because everyone may get some negative criticism one day and it might affect them badly. But I think a lot of people can relate to what you've been through.
Oh no, I've had people. Yeah, you're right. I was trying to. When I spoke to someone about. I spoke to a friend and I said my podcast wasn't really my opinion and how I feel isn't really directed at, obviously, my experience has been in sport, but it resonates with everything. For example, a journalist like yourself, you're going to have there'll be big moments in your career, internationals, you're interviewing the best people, the most important coaches, and you're going to be worried about, oh, I've got the right questions. Did I ask enough? Was I clear enough? Or am I ready mentally to do that? And it's exactly the same thing, but a small bit of anxiety is good. You need a bit of performance anxiety to get your body ready. You're more focused and you're more alert. But if you're really, really worried about it and there's underlying things going on which affect your performance, and that's where you think, right, why is it happening? Is it just because, if it's just a case of, I might go and see a sports psychologist or a psychologist to help me channel that inner fear to make myself more efficient and more relaxed, or is it, there's something else going on which is causing my anxiety far worse? And I think that's what I identified eventually. It took me years to work it out and 3 or 4 therapists and things like that. But that's why I think it resonated with so many people. I was getting people from different businesses. I had my mechanics, engineers, all kinds of people talking to you saying it resonated with me. And I just thought, I'm so glad it did. And I hope you're getting the help you need now. And if there's anything else I can do, please let me know.
Brilliant, Tom. And I mean, also towards the end of the podcast, you mentioned there that you've been seeing therapists, and I think you mentioned it was around your last birthday that you decided that I need to reach out for help again. I need to make that first step. I mean, why then was it a kind of realization for you that you needed to make that step again?
So in November, I was getting, there were days where I was really down or like really anxious and stuff like that, but I'd grown to live with it. And it was more of a day-to-day thing. Like some people wake up with a bad back in the morning. Sometimes it's all right, sometimes it's not. And it doesn't have to be a massive problem that you get through with it. And that's what happened with me. It become second nature. I was like, oh, a little bit bad today. And I was like, I'll just get on it. But it was getting day-to-day where I was noticing I was getting like really paranoid or really anxious. I was getting physical, like, ticks, and I was stuttering loads when I talked. All I wanted to do was sleep. Like, for me, if I feel really anxious or I eat too much, I'm like, just go to sleep and you can just switch your brain off. It doesn't have to happen. Because some people just stay awake all night. It's one or the other, really. Or you overeat, you undereat. It's usually polar opposites. And I was noticing I was doing that. I was getting like really anxious, I feel like I wanted to cry all the time, or I was getting a bit angry. talking to myself more. Just like not necessarily like I said, not like psychosis where I was imagining seeing people. But I was trying to talk myself out of things and just think that, oh, he's talking about me, or that's what was going on. So I was going in the gym or going into team meetings. I was looking at people and they're looking at me. I'm like, oh my God, they're talking about me, or oh my God, what are they thinking about me? Or if I made a mistake in training, I'm like, oh my God, they're all thinking about me, talking about me. I shouldn't be here. I was just very negative. It was getting worse and worse and worse. And one day I woke up and I was in a really bad way. And just getting out of bed is quite tough sometimes. It's obviously some people are like, oh God, I could stay in bed all day. It's just about trying to physically get yourself out of bed, like mentally, like you can do it. And I noticed that one day, I don't know when it was exactly, it must have been just after my birthday. The RPA, obviously very, very big when it comes, big around Premiership, and they look after the players really well. And one of my good mates, Matt Leake, who's in the RPA rep for Bristol, the player development manager, I knocked on his door at the club, and I said, Leakey, mate, I'm not good. I don't know what's wrong. He knew straight away as well. He looked at me and was like, sit down. We had a good conversation. He says, like, look, I think you should reach out to Cognacity, the company that helps support the RPA and underpins the mental health side of things. And I just rang them and I said, I think I need some help. My thoughts were getting really dark, and I was worried. I was just so paranoid, and my focus was, I was losing my focus, my purpose as well. And little things, like little bits of banter from boys or something like that, would just send me over the edge. I was scared that I was going to completely lose it on the pitch. I had one moment on the pitch where a couple of coaches were just giving me direct feedback, and I just couldn't deal with everything that was going on at the time, and I completely lost my head and shouted at them. And it was so embarrassing. I had to apologise to the team, and they completely understood it. I remember going to see Pat, and I said, I'm really sorry. I almost burst into tears, but I didn't. I held it together just about, which should I not? I don't know. I was just being honest. And he completely understood. And he said, don't worry. I understand, but you must be going through a bit of a hard time. So that's why I decided I needed help. And from there, they and Cognacity helped me. And down that line, I've got my treatment, started medication, and just waiting for coronavirus to sort itself out before I start therapy again. So it's got loads better, but that was quite a bad time in my life, to be honest.
Yeah, and you mentioned as well on a podcast, Tom, how important your partner Millie has been in throughout all of this, and how tough it was for you actually to speak to your parents about it. So for people who may be struggling, how important is that first step to speak to your loved ones and reach out? Because I know you said when you did speak to your parents, it did feel like a weight was lifted off your shoulders slightly.
Oh, definitely. I'll start with Millie. Millie's been unbelievable. It's always hard talking to your partner about things, because you worry that you're going to kind of take their energy away from them, keep bringing them down, them trying to be positive all the time around you, because it's going to drain them as well. And obviously, just being positive around someone who may be going through anxiety, depression, you might not get the results that you want to see from that person's depressed, which is tough for both of you, because you're not getting that feedback. Yeah. It's helping. It's not helping at all. It's just not that easy. And the conversation is really important. Millie's been, she finds things hard as well. And it's important that it's hard not to come across that it's just me all the time. It's about making sure it's balanced between you. And I think we both understand that there's some days I'm going to be down or whatever I'm going to be. I'm way more on an even keel. I'm more on an even kilter now, since taking my meds, and it's not as there's no like drastic highs or drastic lows. It's kind of I've managed to hit a happy medium. But Millie's been unbelievable. She's been next to me throughout my entire career, and she's just helped so much, and I owe her a lot. And I just want to make sure she's all right now. That's all I can look out for her, because she's done so much for me. And all I want to do is support her. When it comes to my parents, so obviously my parents live in London, so that was always tough. I don't get to see them very much because of the way the season goes and things like that. And my mum kind of noticed that there was something wrong when she came down in November 4th. We had out for dinner and stuff like that. And she was like, you're right, you seem a bit jittery. Like, I was getting really, I mentioned the podcast that I was, I, still to a certain extent now, I never felt good. I never feel good enough for anyone. I just feel like I go through times where I'm not really happy about myself. I'm quite self-loathe, which I'm trying to get better at. But I never felt good enough for my family or my friends. So when I do see them, I get anxious and I'm paranoid that, oh God, I'm not doing this right. I need to be the matriarch of the family or whatever it needs to be. And like Millie's like, you need to tell your parents that, like, you'd want, if you had a child, you'd want to know what they're going through. So, as I said, I rang her a few times and just shot the breeze with her a few times and just had a conversation. I bottled it about four times. So, but by the last time, I just thought, oh, what's the worst that's going to happen? She's going to disown me and she's never going to talk to me again, which realistically is not going to happen. And I just spoke to her and she just asked me for more, right, and how are things going? And then, she came up and saw me and Millie, and it happened. So she just kept in tabs more. She I don't think she had an awareness of it. It was just a case of, I just needed to be honest with her. And because you never know, the amount of people that have come out, like rugby players that have come out of the woodwork and contacted me saying they've been through a really hard time. And I was like, I'm really sorry. I wasn't even aware. And it's not a case to apologize. If you have noticed something's going on and you didn't do anything, that's a bit harder, because unless you've got to worry about yourself to a certain extent, and if it's going to become detrimental to your own job, then that's hard. But it's getting much better now. Not reporting, but for example, the RPA have put a few boys onto the MHFA course, which is the mental health first aid, which I've done myself. Jake Walmore's done it. I'm trying to think, Ali Muldowney. A few players have done it, and Will Harrell did it as well, which was really good. It doesn't mean you're now a psychologist or a psychotherapist or anything like that. That's not it at all. It just means that you can identify cues and be like, right, and you can speak to that person, open-ended questions, and try and get a feel of where they are, and you're a support for them. And that was really good, because that gave me more of an awareness than when I do coach, teach, or manage staff or anything like that. I'd be able to notice traits and understand how to make them better themselves. Because one key doesn't fit every lock. You need to make sure that different keys fit different locks, and you can actually have different managerial styles or coaching styles for each person to make sure you get the best out of them. So that's what I learned through that as well, which was really helpful. And I thank the RPA and the MHFA for that.
Because I was going to come on to your RPA stuff, because they were one of the organisations, Tom, that tweeted you saying, thank you so much for sort of the work you've been able to do in the RPA, along with other foundations and organisations like Looseheads are doing unbelievable work around mental health, especially in rugby. So how important are organisations like the RPA, Tom?
Oh, they're hugely important. Obviously, every big sector or corporation is going to have a union to make sure the employees are looked after and they get the best from their employers. And the RPA has got, so obviously part of the Restart charity as well, but they looked after Ed Jackson, Michael Fatialofa. These players have given they put their boys on the line for the game of rugby in England, and they're just being looked after. And that, but these are Matt Hampson's as well. They've just hugely been looked after by the charities. And then, of course, you've got the personal development. They help link with universities, colleges, and they help players earning, I think it's, players earning under 100 grand. If you get a grant, you can get a grant and they can help you out. And year on year on year, they can help you out, which is a huge resource. And it should be, I've used it before as well. It's very good. But apart from all that, I was very lucky to be at the appointed RPA rep for Bristol. So the boys all voted who they wanted, and it was between myself, Sam Jeffries, and Will Harrell. And I was very lucky to be voted. Obviously, I wasn't expecting there to be a global pandemic at the end of the season for us to deal with, and when it came to contracts and wage cuts and furlough. But look, it was great. So I can now put, I've dealt with crisis management when it comes down to my CV, which I'm really happy about. But I love making sure the boys were all right and looked after the boys. And Matt Leake, as I talked about, he's amazing. He's an amazing development manager. He does so much for players at Bath and Bristol. And I can see him going very far up with the RPA, because he just knows how it works. He's from being an ex-player himself. And the boys, I think when it first started out, the RPA, there was a percentage of the league that kind of was like, oh, I can use the RPA, I'm a member of it. blah blah. I'll only join the RPA because I'll get my payout when I get injured at the end, which obviously is a part of it, which they look after. It's not a guaranteed payout, but they'll help you out to see if they can work it out. But they do so many things for so many people, and they've taken a bit of flack in the press recently, which I think is completely unfounded, to be honest. How hard it's been in the current climate with the pandemic. It's a completely unprecedented time, and I think they've done everything they could have. With Damien Hopley, Rich Bryant, and Christian Day, they've done a wonderful job, and Mark Lambert, obviously the honorary chairman. So I think I thoroughly enjoyed it, and when they said thank you, I was very proud to have been part of that fantastic association as a player and as a rep since I was 18. So it's a great organization, and I think players will realise that if down the line something does happen to the RPA, I hope it doesn't, I think players can be like, right, they didn't realise how good they had it.
Yeah, couldn't agree more with you on that, Tom. And in terms of just finally on the mental health side of things, how much would you like to see more happen in rugby to sort of tackle the stigma, to coin Loosehead's phrase? Because we're seeing, as you mentioned before, a lot more people in the game talking about their mental health problems. But is there anything you'd like to see happen to make this more of a recurring theme?
I think obviously we have our Mental Health Awareness Week, and Loosehead's are doing a huge amount of stuff, which is fantastic for players. I see all the player advocates out there and the ambassadors, which is huge, because you have players from all leagues, not just professional players, that go through whatever race, gender, sexuality you are. Everyone has mental health, not to say problems, issues. They can go through all kinds of things. Death of the family, breakups, I don't know, sickness, anything. And it's about it's being able to resonate with someone that you look up to, or you see on the TV, or you watch in the stadium, like, he's got the same thing as me. That means, oh, he said it's okay to have this, or this is what he's doing to get better. Maybe I could try that. It's okay. You don't feel isolated, because when you have got anxiety, depression, or bipolars, or anything like that, isolation, your head wants you to isolate yourself. You want to stay away from everyone. You want to kind of just cocoon yourself in your own little bubble. And that's probably the worst thing you can do. Socializing, getting outdoors, exercise, that's gonna help you. So I think what Loosehead is doing is fantastic. I think everyone's doing podcasts and webinars. They're really good. I think when it comes down to the actual rugby clubs itself, professional clubs, I talked about, obviously the doctors at all these premiership clubs are fantastic. Doctors at Bristol have been brilliant. Harriet and Doc John have been amazing. But I think every club should have a psychologist or a psychotherapist or a counsellor, but I don't think the club should be employing them. I think the RFU should employ them or externally sourced, and have a office somewhere. I don't know. It doesn't have to be on the premises, but somewhere, I don't know, where the club, where the boys can go and drop in whenever they need to, anonymously, wherever they can. So they know they've got that support there and then. And I don't know if the RFU or, I don't know, a governing body does support that. That way, obviously, you've got players you know are looked after. You know everyone, where they are, who they're, who's important to them, what they're going through, their history of what they've been through as well, and what treatment they're getting. And you also, like from an outsider perspective, the amount of information you'll be gaining on elite athletes then. Obviously, it'll be confidential, but you'll know in statistically wise how many players, what disorders, how long they've had it for. And that way, that can raise a huge awareness, and then they can start talking about how they can improve it throughout the clubs, with raising awareness, like with Looseheads, with loads of other kind of mental health podcasts or mental health companies. So I think once you have the information and the actual players on board, I think that'll help loads of people. And obviously there's going to be some people that don't want to admit they've got mental health problems, or they don't feel that they can have the confidence to do it. But by seeing more and more players do it, I guarantee if it came out saying, I don't know, six players from every rugby team in the country had come forward, that's a lot of players. It's over 70, 75 players. And you think, oh God, maybe the year after it's 85, 95, 100, whatever it is. Not necessarily they have to be going through depression, anxiety, but they could be putting a stop to that happening just by having a conversation. I feel quite anxious today or the last couple of days. the next, if he has a conversation the next day with a psychotherapist, he could deal with that then and there, rather than leaving 2, 3, 4 months and developing an actual anxiety issue. So I think that's something that maybe they could look at, or I don't know how they'd go about doing it, but I just think clubs need it. As I said, the RPA, they have people coming in doing seminars with boys and talk about things, their problems with gambling or drug abuse or whatever it may be. So that works as well. I just think it's got to be a person-to-person level. It can't be a mail shot that can be sent to anyone, or an email, if you know what I mean. It's got to be something that people have to be directly involved in. So that's what I think happening. I'm trying to think of other things. I have been trying to brainstorm, but that's what I've come up so far with.
Absolutely, Tom. And I guess one part of sort of the transition out of rugby is thinking about what you're going to do after you retire. And you mentioned before that you've been coaching the Bristol Bears women over the last couple of years. Is that a passion of yours now to continue the coaching moving forward?
So I've been coaching about 10 years. So I've coached outside of rugby. Outside of actual professional rugby, I coached academy players. I've been a specialist throwing coach, a specialist scrummage coach as well. I coached a girls team when I was at Gloucester in Cheltenham Tigers. And I've also been helping at Bristol some of the academy players, upskilling them from the front rowers and other academy. But I've also been doing work with Colston School, going in there and doing a lot of stuff with not just rugby players, but cricket, football, hockey, wherever. And also I've been talking to teachers about styles of coaching and how, because if you think about schools, you've got the head of maths who has got nothing, doesn't know anything about rugby, and he's coaching the under 14 D team. And like it's how you can coach a sport but make it fun for them, but you understand the why. If you understand the why you're going to do something, you'll do it. If I tell you I want you to, I don't know, throw this ball over there because I told you to, I guarantee they do it once or twice. I'm bored of this, I don't know why I'm doing it, I don't really want to do it anymore. If you give them an idea of why they're doing it, a focus, a challenge, they're probably more likely to do it. And it makes it easier for you to manage the pupils if they're engaged in that 45-minute period or whatever it is. So that's something else I've been looking at as well. And yes, as the Bristol Bears coaching, yeah, I volunteered there for about a year ago. And then in September, Jordan Crane had the role originally, and he developed into the Forwards Academy coach. So they asked me if I'd like to do it. And I'd already turned it down because I was doing some university coaching stuff, but I couldn't turn it down again. It was just too good of a chance to do it, to work with some international players. And so I've really enjoyed it. I've worked with Kim Oliver there. We got on very well, and I'm looking forward to going forward with it because we're aiming to win the Premiership in 2 years, the Tyrrells Premiership in 2 years. That's our focus. That's our goal. And we're looking forward to doing that. And we're very, very lucky because he wants all the teams under one umbrella. So we'll be very lucky to have quite a lot of their resources. Players will be dropping in to do some extra coaching. It works, it's a two-way street, obviously. We get Charles Pietau comes in, the girls be like, oh my God, it's Charles Pietau. But he also gets an opportunity then to like how to coach different levels. I firmly believe throughout my career coaching, as I talked about knowing your audience, I've coached children, disabled children, men, women, elderly, all kinds of people. And I've learned so much from doing that in different demographics that I'm comfortable coaching whoever I want. And I just think some men find it really hard to coach women. I'm not being sexist. I've spoken to the girls about this. And when I've ever coached women, they like to know why they're doing it. Tell me how to do it. I'll do it, try it. And then we can work out what we can do better. But if you tell someone to do it again without explaining it, I promise you, you'll find it very hard, because that's how a lot of the girls at Bristol Bears anyway and Cheltenham Tigers, when my experience, liked it. And I got on really well with them because once I worked out what the key to them learning and developing was, I'm like, right, I know how to do it now. Whereas if you do it with elite 18-year-old boys, you could be like, lift like this, because whatever, it does it straight away, and they'll do it straight away for you. It's understanding who you're coaching and why. And I'm really looking forward to keep going forward with it as well. So being able to work with internationals, and we've got quite a few now. I think we've announced a few more re-signings at the moment. Yeah. Amber Reid's re-signed, and so is Sarah Byrne and Rowanita Marston. They're all three cap players. And Clara Nelson, of course, she's also been involved in England. So it's huge to have that kind of player base in the spine of our squad. And going forward, I think it's very exciting. We've got good people in place, great staff in the back room as well going forward. So sky's the limit with this team. It's just making sure, well, hopefully we can get the ball rolling soon at some point if coronavirus decides to piss off. Pardon my French.
Hopefully that is the case, Tom. Well, we wish you all the best with the coaching side of things. But thank you so much for being so open and honest as well on TRU Talk today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and congratulations on such a great playing career as well.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and look forward to following you along, mate.
Tom's socials will be in the description if Tom doesn't mind. If you want to get in touch with anything Tom's talked about, I'm sure he's willing to, you know, have a message, have a chat with you. And he seems to have got so much support over the last week or so. So I'm sure another message won't harm the inbox too much. So many thanks again to Tom and Bristol Bears for allowing us to chat to him today. And that has been another episode of TRU Talks.